Chapter 5. With her sister not talking to her and Moth shooting her angry looks, Sabrina turned to the book her grandmother had given her when they had arrived in the city. A Midsummer Night's Dream was a play starring Puck and his obnoxious parents. Cobweb and Moth were in it as well. Though the old-fashioned writing was challenging, it didn't take a brain surgeon to realize Shakespeare had his hands full with Oberon and Titania. He described them both as petty, jealous, and manipulative. Apparently, Sabrina realized nothing had changed in the 400-plus years since the play had been written. When Granny returned to the room, Mr. Canis was with her. Except for a glimpse that morning, Sabrina hadn't seen him since the night before. She was shocked at his appearance. He had grown several inches in height and packed on 20 pounds of muscle. His shock of white hair now had brown streaks in it, and he had what looked like the definite beginnings of a beard and mustache. Sabrina knew what was happening to the old man. Lately, whenever he tapped into the big bad wolf's power, he lost a little more of himself. She wondered what the family would do when there was no more of Mr. Canis to lose. But she said nothing. Granny didn't mention anything either, and acted as if all was well. She was eager to get back on the case, and urged the girls to hurry and put on their coats, hats, and mittens. Most of the day was spent scurrying from one neighborhood to the next, hoping beyond hope that they would stumble upon an ever after. Bess had given them plenty of leads, but all had been dead ends. Still, Granny Relda was determined. She must have poked her head into every dark restaurant and creepy alley in Manhattan. They spoke to dozens of street people who knew more neighborhood secrets than anyone else. Many were homeless, and Granny Relda thanked them all for their time and information with $5 bills, insisting they use the money to put something warm in their bellies. But none of their tips led the family to ever afters. The closest the detectives got was discovering a man wearing a wedding dress riding a multicolored bicycle around Washington Square Park. He turned out to be human. With Mr. Hampstead and Bess no doubt sharing a romantic meal somewhere, the rest of the investigators decided to stop for an early dinner at a small Chinese restaurant called The Happy Duck. As they went inside, Sabrina noticed 8 roasted ducks hanging in the window and wondered if they were all that happy. The restaurant was the kind of place where the menu was as big as a phone book, the staff spoke little English, and the tables were crowded together. The waiters eyed Puck's cocoon and pinched their noses in disgust as the group made their way to a table in the back near a huge fish tank. Daphne ordered for the whole table and enough food for several others, and Sabrina relaxed, thinking the meal would be a welcome, cheering break from tramping through the snow. But Granny snuck off to make a phone call halfway through the feast. Mr. Canis sat silently throughout with his eyes closed, breathing in and out in a slow pattern. Puck's cocoon kept rubbing up against Sabrina, drenching her in sticky goo. Daphne was still not talking to her, and Moth refused to eat, saying the food was a travesty and unfit for pigs. It was the most uncomfortable meal of Sabrina's entire life. She couldn't have been more relieved when her grandmother returned to the table.
"Your Uncle Jacob says everything is well," Granny said. "Has he found a way to wake up Mom and Dad?" Sabrina asked, hopefully.
Granny shook her head.
"He said he was trying every magical potion we have in the house. Unfortunately, he's had to abandon the place for a couple of days."
"Why? What happened?"
"He made the mistake of giving Elvis a plate of sausage."
Giving their dog Elvis sausage was a big no-no. It did bad things to the 200-pound Great Dane. Very bad, very smelly things. The last time Daphne had given him sausage, they'd almost had to move.
"I miss Elvis," the little girl said.
She leaned back in her chair and rubbed her protruding belly.
"Look at me. I'm having a baby. I'm going to name him Number 15 with egg roll."
Granny laughed.
"Liebling, you've got food all down the front of your shirt. Let me take you into the bathroom and clean you up."
Daphne shrugged as if she didn't care, but followed the old woman anyway.
"I believe I would like to wash my hands," Mr. Canis said, and got up as well.
Unfortunately, that left Sabrina and Moth alone. Sabrina tried to ignore the fairy girl, but Moth's angry eyes were boring into her.
"Let's make something clear, human," Moth said. "If you attempt to interfere in my relationship with Puck, you will regret it. He is my fiancé." "Listen, I don't want your fiancé. I'm 11. I'm not even allowed to have a boyfriend. So when Puck finally crawls out of his icky ball, you can be sure he's all yours."
"You do not love him?" Moth said.
"No," Sabrina said a little too loudly.
She looked around the room and felt every eye on her, including those of Mr. Canis, who was waiting in line for the bathroom. He had a smile on his face, but when she shot him an angry look, it disappeared, and he went back to studying the ceiling.
"I do not want anything to confuse Puck when he finally reconsiders Oberon's choice," Moth said.
"What are you talking about? What is Oberon's choice?"
"Me! I am Oberon's choice. He selected me to be Puck's bride," Moth said.
"What do you mean, he selected you?"
"It's called the father's privilege. Fairy fathers choose their sons' mates."
"Oh, I bet Puck loved that. I wish I could have seen his face when his dad made that announcement."
Moth snarled, and Sabrina realized the girl took the subject very seriously.
"So then what happened?" Sabrina asked.
"The prince was confused."
"You mean he dumped you?" Sabrina said.
"He made a mistake, and unfortunately, his father punished him for it. Puck was banished from Faerie. That was more than 10 years ago, and we hadn't heard from him until yesterday," Moth said.
"He's been stuck in Fairyport Landing. It's like a big roach motel. You can check in, but you can't check out," Sabrina said.
"From what I know of him, you shouldn't be too upset he left. Puck would drive you crazy. You're better off without him."
"How dare you?" Moth cried. "King Puck is a great fairy."
"Sorry," Sabrina said.
"But I have to ask you, if he left town to avoid getting married once, why do you think things are going to be different this time?"
Moth snarled but said nothing.
"Well, I hope it works out for you," Sabrina said sarcastically. "The Trickster King is a real catch."
The two girls sat in silence until the others returned to the table.
"Who wants some lychee ice cream?"
Daphne cried.
"You're still hungry?"
Mr. Canis asked.
"I'm still awake, aren't I?"
While everyone looked over the dessert menu, Sabrina took her mother's little pink wallet out of her pocket and flipped it open. She stole a peek at her mom's picture. Just then, she noticed a small flap hidden behind the photo. She opened it, stuck her fingers inside, and pulled out an oddly colored business card. It was dark blue and covered in little moons and stars, and had an inscription. "Scrooge's Financial and Spiritual Advice, Affordable Rates, 18 West 18th Street. Voted Best Psychic by Time Out New York Magazine." Sabrina flipped the card over and discovered handwriting on the other side. "Veronica, stop by anytime. I owe you one. E. Scrooge."
"What did you find?" Granny Relda asked.
"Just some old business card in my mother's wallet," Sabrina said, handing it over. "I think it's for a psychic or something."
Granny read the inscription and a big grin filled her face.
"Sabrina, for someone who doesn't want to be a detective, you're very good at it. You just found an important clue."
Sabrina was dumbfounded.
"Clue? It's just a card for some scam artist."
"Maybe, maybe not," the old woman said, waving the card like it was a winning lottery ticket. "But whether he's the real deal doesn't matter. What's important is that he's a never after, and we've got his address."
Daphne took the card and read the inscription.
"What makes you think he's a never after?"
"Look at the name on the card, E. Scrooge."
"Yeah, so?" Sabrina said.
"E. Scrooge, as in Ebenezer Scrooge," Granny said. "The guy from A Christmas Carol?" Daphne said as she prepared her palm for biting.
"The one and only," Granny said.
Daphne bit down hard. 18th Street was a pothole-riddled road in a part of town called Chelsea. As the group made their way to Scrooge's shop, they passed an art supply store, a vintage record outlet, a children's bookstore, and several places where a person could buy mannequins and sewing machine parts. Scrooge's financial and spiritual advice was in the middle of the block. In the grimy window was an enormous green neon sign with an eye that blinked every few moments below the words Spirits and Savings Bonds. Sabrina studied the sign for a moment, running through everything she knew about Scrooge in her mind. Charles Dickens had documented the story. A greedy businessman was visited by the ghosts of Christmas. She had seen the musical at Madison Square Garden when she was little, and clearly remembered Scrooge as a nasty old man. The waiting room was crowded with some of the strangest people Sabrina had ever seen. They wore what could only be called holiday-themed costumes, from every holiday imaginable. Patriotic uniforms with sparklers, bright emerald suits covered in shamrocks, turkey costumes, Cupid outfits. There was even a guy wearing a big paper top hat and a pair of glasses that read, "Happy New Year!" The family approached an empty desk at the far end of the room. A little sign on top read, "Tim Cratchit." Next to it was a silver bell with another sign that read, "Ring Bell for Service." Granny tapped it lightly, sending a chiming sound into the air. "I'll be right out," a voice shouted from behind a closed door near the desk. The voice was followed by a mechanical sound, like an engine, and another noise like something heavy had crashed into a box of fine china. Moments later, a kid with a round face and freckles appeared in the doorway on a motorized chair. He seemed to have no control over the machine, and he repeatedly slammed it into the doorframe. After several minutes of labored backing up, and then failed efforts to roll forward, he finally got the chair through the narrow doorway. Unfortunately, his problems didn't stop there. Once he entered the room, he slammed the chair into the desk and sent it crashing to the floor. "Blast it!" the kid shouted in a thick English accent. He tried to pull the desk upright and nearly tipped himself onto the floor in the process. Exhausted just from watching him, Sabrina stepped in and lifted the desk upright. Once the boy was comfortably situated, the waiting room crowd rushed forward, jostling the investigators to the back of the line. Everyone began arguing at once. "I have to be somewhere in 15 minutes," said the man wearing New Year's glasses. He took a small plastic horn out of his mouth and gave it an angry toot.
"Well, I was here first,"
a giant complained as he pushed himself to the front. He was covered in leaves and pine cones and smelled like a forest. Tim Cratchit whistled loudly and the crowd grew silent.
"Are any of you paying customers?"
"Come on, Tim,"
an enormous man in a bunny suit said.
"We've been waiting all day."
"And you'll wait all night," Tim cried. "You buggers show up any time you please. Mr. Scrooge is a busy man and hasn't the time to waste on a bunch of penniless layabouts."
We've got money,"
Granny said. Tim's eyes searched for her in the crowd, and then he smiled.
"Are you alive?"
Sabrina and Daphne eyed each other.
"Last time I checked," Sabrina said.
"Well, I can't just take your word for it,"
Tim said as he accidentally pushed a button that sent the chair slamming into the desk again.
"We're very busy here, and we only have time for paying and living customers."
His words caused the crowd to erupt in protest.
"You want proof that we're alive?" Mr. Canis asked as he and the others approached the desk. "How do we do that?"
The boy reached over to Sabrina and Daphne and gave them both painful pinches on the arm. They yelped angrily, and Daphne kicked the boy's chair.
"Okay, I'm satisfied. Now, are you here for the boss's financial expertise, or are you interested in his supernatural skills?"
"I'm not really sure," Granny said. "We want to ask him a few questions."
"Well, have a seat and I'll see if he can fit you in,"
Tim said as he began the laborious effort of turning his mechanical chair around and steering it back through the door from which he had come. When he disappeared through it, there were more loud crashes and then shouts from another angry voice.
"Tim Cratchit," Do you have any idea how much a box of crystal balls costs these days? I didn't buy you that mechanical chair so you could race through the store trashing everything.
Sorry, boss, Tim shouted. You've got customers, and they're breathers.
Suddenly, the door flew open, and a thin, wiry old man in a black suit hurried into the room. His hair was bushy and white, and stood up in all directions, almost as if he had been repeatedly scared out of his wits.
So, who was next?
He said with a broad smile. Everyone in the waiting room said,
Me! Only the living people,
Scrooge bellowed.
That would be us, Granny said,
taking the opportunity to usher the girls and Mr. Canis forward.
Excellent,
the old man said as he gestured for the group to follow him into the back. They had to wait for Tim to get out of the doorway, but once this was accomplished, they found themselves in a room decorated in ruby and midnight blue tapestries with fluffy pillows scattered on the floor. Incense burned in a small pot on a shelf. In the middle of the room was a round table surrounded by 6 high-backed chairs. The old man invited everyone to sit down and then did so himself.
I apologize for that mob scene. I hired Tim to keep them out, but I think the boy is in over his head.
He continued, Ghosts can be quite a handful.
Ghosts, Sabrina said with a laugh.
If the man heard the doubt in her voice, he ignored it.
They're like mice. I can't get rid of them. Ever since that business with the ghosts of Christmas past, present, and future, all the spirits in the astral plane feel it's their duty to come and show me how I've ruined the holidays of everyone I know. I'll admit I was a pain at Christmas time, but since then I've been haunted by the ghosts of Easter, Passover, Thanksgiving, Yom Kippur, the anniversary of the Boxer Rebellion, Bastille Day, Lincoln's birthday, anything you can think of. The whole thing has gotten ridiculous. How many Arbor Days could I have ruined? Not to mention Kwanzaa, Secretary's Day, and the anniversary of the Woodstock concert. It got so bad I was fired from my job at the bank. It's really difficult to approve home loans with the ghost of Earth Day Future walking around turning off all the office computers to save energy.
Scrooge bent under the table and came up with a calculator and a crystal ball.
Okay, let's get down to business. We do 2 things here, finances and phantoms. What's it going to be?
Granny reached into her handbag and removed the business card Sabrina had found in her mother's wallet. Scrooge took it, flipped it over, and then smiled.
Ah, Veronica, he said wistfully. Where did you get this?
She's my mom, Daphne said.
The man grinned. Your mother is a saint. She helped me get the lease on this store when I decided to go into business for myself. She's lovely, just lovely. What can I do for you?
We're investigating King Oberon's death, and we were hoping you might...
Of course, Scrooge said, cutting off Granny Relder. Everybody grab hands and close your eyes.
Mr. Scrooge, I'm a bit confused. We aren't here to talk to spirits, the old woman said.
Oh.
We were hoping you might be able to give us some information. Anything you might know about who would have wanted to kill the king.
Scrooge laughed.
Well, you don't need a psychic for that. Everyone wanted to kill the king. I wanted to kill the king. He was a jerk.
A zoid,
Daphne finished.
He was arrogant, stupid, meddling, Scrooge cried. He'd sent his goons down here to collect his tax.
Extortion money, if you ask me.
Most of us thought he was a royal pain in the...
You weren't at the meeting yesterday,
Mr. Canis interrupted.
No, I gave up on all that nonsense when the real fairy fell, Scrooge said.
Yes, we keep hearing about fairy, Sabrina said.
Fairy was a great idea, a neighborhood of ever-afters. It used to be downtown, but people started moving in and ever-afters kept getting moved out. Pretty soon, we were way out in Jersey City, New Jersey. Well, I wasn't going to tolerate that. An ever-after has got to have standards. Before I knew it, we were pushed out of Jersey, too. Eventually, someone suggested the park. No one lives there but the squirrels. They had a witch set up the golden egg. Oberon said we'd buy land and start anew, but it never happened. We couldn't get along long enough to make anything work. But if you want to know about stuff like this, you should take it right from the horse's mouth. Oberon himself.
Old man, did we not just tell you the king is dead?
Mr. Canis snapped. You read the sign on the door, right? You people aren't getting it, are you? Here, take my hand, Scrooge said, snatching Sabrina's in his own. Now, close your eyes. We have to concentrate to get Oberon's attention.
Is this going to give me nightmares?
Daphne cried, taking Scrooge's other hand. Depends. Was his head chopped off or anything like that? They often come back looking the way they did when they died.
He was poisoned,
Granny Relda said, sounding a little uneasy. Should be okay. He might be a little green. Still, I have to warn you. Even if we see Oberon, he'll be difficult to understand. I think it has something to do with the energy they use to become full torso apparitions. They trade the body for the language, but we'll do our best. Sometimes I can make out what they want to say by having them play charades. Now, let's concentrate. Oberon? Oberon, are you there? Sabrina rolled her eyes.
You're just going to call out his name? It's that easy?
Fine, if you want the whole shebang, there's no extra charge, Scrooge said as he flipped a switch on the wall. Rays of light shot out of the crystal ball, speckling the tapestries with shimmering suns, moons, and stars. The sound of a powerful wind came from speakers mounted on the ceiling. Scrooge reached under the table and pulled out a huge Swami hat. It was bright purple and had a shiny red ruby in its center. He plopped it on his head. This authentic enough for you? Sabrina scowled. Oberon, King of the Fairies, we call on you. Come forth and reveal yourself, Scrooge continued. Unfortunately, his request went unanswered, and the family sat waiting for several minutes.
I'm sorry. Dead people can be a bit shy, the psychic said nervously.
His former confidence seemed to fade.
Oberon! Come out, come out, wherever you are.
That's right, Your Majesty. We're having a party and you're invited.
This is ridiculous, Sabrina said, leaping to her feet.
She was fully prepared to march out of the room when an odd chill crept up her spine. She felt as if she had a horrible head cold. In fact, her whole body felt weird, almost as if it were filled with stuffing, like she had become a giant teddy bear.
Granny, what's going on? Sabrina cried as she watched the hair on her arms stand on end.
I think he's here, Scrooge said, sounding relieved.
Oberon, is that you? Sabrina's mouth opened on its own, and a ghostly voice echoed out of it.
Where am I?
Hey, did that come out of me?
Sabrina cried, looking at her sister, who stared at her with eyes as wide as moons. Even Moth looked a bit freaked out.
Wowzers, Scrooge said to Sabrina. You're a natural medium. Ghosts feel comfortable talking through you. Your mother had the same ability.
But Sabrina couldn't respond. The ghost had full possession of her now.
Where am I?
The voice said. This time Sabrina's arms flailed around as if she were angry. Scrooge bit his lip.
Oberon, I have some bad news for you. Are you sitting down?
I don't know,
Oberon's voice said.
Hey, where's my body?
Yeah, that's the bad news. You're dead.
There was a long silence, but Sabrina could still feel the king's presence inside of her. Suddenly, her mouth opened again, and a single frustrated word came out.
Fudge!
I know, it's a real bummer. Right now you're stuck in limbo and you're going to stay there until your killer is brought to justice. Luckily, we've got some people here who want to help you out with that inconvenience.
King Oberon, it is I, your loyal subject, Moth. I have been caring for Puck since you have departed,
the little fairy bragged as she hefted Puck's cocoon onto the table.
He is here with me.
I know. I can smell him from the astral plane,
Oberon groaned, then forced Sabrina's body to walk over to Puck's cocoon. Sabrina felt her hand move over it, caressing the cocoon lightly. She could feel a wave of regret pour over her, an odd sensation considering how Oberon reacted when he discovered Puck in his office. Hadn't he called his son a traitor? Sabrina also felt Oberon's hold on her body weaken. She took the opportunity to wrench back control.
"Get out of me!" she demanded.
"Sabrina, don't fight him. We need to ask him some important questions," Granny said.
"Easy for you to say. There's only one person in your body," Sabrina cried.
"Oberon, do you have any idea who killed you?" Granny Relda said.
"Cobweb!"
the voice bellowed as Oberon took control again.
"He poisoned me. He brought me a glass of wine to celebrate the arrival of Veronica's girls. A moment after he left, I felt faint and collapsed. Then there was a terrible pain and blackness."
"I knew it!" Moth cried.
The family looked at her in disbelief.
"Well, I did."
"Do you know why he wanted to kill you?" Granny asked Oberon.
"No,"
the king said.
"He's the last person I would have suspected. Oh, I am so angry. I had Rangers tickets this season. What a waste."
"Are you sure Cobweb acted alone?" Mr. Canis said. "Perhaps he was working with another person who wanted you dead."
"Like who? Everyone loves me."
"We saw you fighting with your wife," Granny replied.
"Titania? Impossible. She wouldn't kill me. Sure, we fight, but you try being married for 5,000 years and see if you don't bicker."
"Did you know that Cobweb was a member of the Scarlet Hand?" Granny asked.
"The Scarlet what?"
Oberon asked.
"I've never heard of any Scarlet Hand. Listen, you've got to find Cobweb and bring him to justice."
Suddenly, the chill in Sabrina's body disappeared, and a new voice came from her mouth.
"Please insert 50 cents for 10 more minutes.
"Sorry, we've lost the connection," Scrooge said.
"Well, get him back," Moth cried. "We need to know if Oberon suspects anyone else."
"I'm sorry. He's gone. I hope it was helpful," Scrooge said. Granny stood up.
"It was more than helpful. We now know who killed Oberon, and all we have to do is track down this Cobweb. If only detective work were always this easy."
"Forget detective work," Scrooge said. "Sabrina could make a bundle as a psychic."
Sabrina cringed. The group thanked Scrooge for his help, and then exited the room where they found Tim struggling with his desk again. They helped him set it upright, and then paid Scrooge's fee.
"Satisfied customers, eh? Well, that's good news," Tim said as he counted the bills. "The governor tends to get a lot of bad connections these days. I was a big fan of your mother, by the way. She was good people."
Daphne rested her elbows on his desk and smiled brightly.
"Would you say it for me?" she asked.
"Say what?"
"You know, the line,"
the little girl begged. Tim frowned, rolled his eyes, and took a deep breath.
"God bless us, everyone," he grumbled.
Daphne clapped her hands and giggled like she'd just stumbled into a surprise party.
"I should start charging for that," Tim muttered.
"So, we know who killed Oberon. What do we do now?" Sabrina said when the group stepped back out into the street.
"Mustard Seed said to report everything to Oz," Granny said as she raised her hand to hail a cab.
One quickly pulled over.
"Where to, folks?" the cabbie said.
"Macy's Department Store," Granny said as she helped the girls into the taxi.
"I'm feeling tired," Mr. Canis said from the sidewalk. "I believe I could use some time alone. Do you think you can manage without me?"
Granny nodded.
"Do you need a ride?"
Mr. Canis shook his head. Relda waved goodbye, and the taxi pulled away from the curb and headed north toward Macy's. Daphne clapped her hands.
"We're off to see the wizard!"
Sabrina rolled her eyes.
"You've been waiting all day to say that, haven't you?"
Daphne grinned from ear to ear. When they arrived at Macy's, they found a huge crowd of people pushing their way into the store at the same time that an equally huge crowd was trying to get out. Sabrina was not surprised. After all, Christmas Eve was just 3 days away, and what would the holidays be without thousands of panicked shoppers scrambling for last-minute gifts? Granny urged them all to hold hands as they politely moved through the mob.
"Mommy!" a small child cried as he pointed at Puck's cocoon. "I want that for Christmas!"
Sabrina snickered to herself, imagining the stinky sack underneath a Christmas tree. She would love to see Puck's face when he crawled out of it, only to find a weird little boy staring at him.
"So, did Oz say what he does at the store?"
Daphne yelled above the crowd.
"No, but I'm sure if we ask, someone will help us find him,"
Granny Relda said.
"He's a bit of a character. Everyone must know him."
"I found him," Moth said, pointing at one of the many huge picture windows that ran along the sides of the block-long building at Herald Square. There was Oz behind the glass, working on a window display featuring several elves who were supposed to be assembling toys in a red and green factory. The elves were robots run by electricity, yet they moved like human beings, laughing, waving, and pounding away on their toys. One, however, had obviously gone haywire. It was pounding on its robot brethren. Oz stood nearby, aiming his silver remote at the malfunctioning elf. A throng of people pressed against the window, watching the wizard work on the remarkable creations and giggling at his troubles. Sabrina glanced down the street and noticed that there were similar crowds ogling the other windows, which featured scenes from The Night Before Christmas, A Christmas Carol, and The Nutcracker. Each window display was more magical than the last. Sabrina remembered that L. Frank Baum, the man who had written about the Land of Oz, had described the wizard as a mechanical genius, able to create realistic, even frightening illusions. He was so talented, he had once convinced the entire country of Oz that he was a powerful sorcerer. Granny maneuvered through the crowd and tapped on the window. Oz turned with an irritated expression, which disappeared when he spotted her. He waved for her to come inside, and then climbed out of the back of the window display. The group squirmed their way into the bustling store, where Oz met them. He shook their hands and then ushered them into a room marked Staff Only. What Sabrina saw inside was even more amazing than the window displays. The room was filled with half-finished figures, many blinking and buzzing, waiting for their moment in the spotlight. Robotic birds sat on perches singing sweet little songs, and a family of half-painted polar bears played with a newborn cub in the corner. They looked so real it was hard not to get nervous around them. There were also stacks of papers and old engineering books lying about, a full-length mirror leaning against the wall, and a cot sitting in the far corner. Sabrina suspected the wizard slept in his workroom more often than not.
"I'm sorry, I'm so frazzled," Oz said as he offered everyone a seat. "Today is What Happened to the Rest of the Year Day here at the store. You'd think people might realize there are 364 days to shop before Christmas."
"We were admiring your windows," Granny said. "The displays are extraordinary."
Oz picked up a robot head. It blinked at him and smiled.
"Yes, well, it's the closest thing I'll get to real magic. I used to be a first-rate sleight-of-hand man back in the day. When I first found myself in Oz, I did a trick for the mayor of Munchkinland, and before I knew it, I was the great and terrible Oz. Unfortunately, there isn't a lot of demand in New York City for a guy with that title. I tried my hand entertaining at kids' birthday parties, but video games put an end to that, of course. When I heard about this job, I jumped at it. I always had a knack for mechanical things. Now I create illusions with circuits instead of my hands."
"They look almost real," Daphne said.
"Thank you," Oz replied. "They're like my children. In fact, if I can't get that elf in the window to behave, I'm going to have to put him in time out. Now, I know you all didn't come down here just to admire the decorations. How goes the search?"
"We've got a suspect," Daphne said.
Oz raised an eyebrow.
"Cobweb," Granny said.
"That can't be," Oz said.
"Oberon told us," Daphne added.
The wizard raised both eyebrows.
It's a long story, Granny said. We believe Cobweb's been working with a group called the Scarlet Hand.
That mark they found on Oberon, Oz said. Granny nodded.
Can you pass this information on to Mustard Seed? He may be in danger from Cobweb as well.
Of course, Oz said.
Unfortunately, that brings us to another dead end. We don't know where to find Cobweb. He's still not at the Golden Egg, is he?
No, all but Titania, Mustard Seed, and his men have scattered.
Did he have any friends? Granny Relda asked.
The wizard shook his head. He was pretty busy following Oberon and Titania's orders. He was very loyal to them. That's what makes this all such a big surprise. Still, there might be someone who can help. There's a fairy godmother over in West Midtown who I've seen with Cobweb. If he needs a place to hide, he might head there. Her name is Twyla Rose. She owns a dress shop.
That's a big help, Daphne said.
By the way, Oz said, between me and you, your friend, the chubby guy?
Mr. Hampstead? Sabrina asked.
Yes. He's made himself a powerful enemy today. Word is he stole Tony Fats's girlfriend. If I were him, I'd get out of town as fast as possible. The fairy godfathers aren't people you mess around with.
Twyla Rose's Fashion Emporium was on the corner of 11th Avenue and 57th Street, next to a parking lot for garbage trucks. The smell on the block was even worse than the one coming from Puck's cocoon. Granny had left word at the hotel for Mr. Hampstead and Bess to meet them at the fairy godmother's store. They arrived soon after the Grimms and Moth, though they were so caught up in conversation, they barely noticed the family waiting for them in the fading daylight. Granny pulled the couple aside and gave them Oz's warning. Bess looked concerned, but Mr. Hampstead just smiled and reminded Granny Relda that he was more than capable of taking care of himself and Bess, if need be. While the grown-ups talked, Sabrina looked at the store's window display and decided that this Twyla Rose person wasn't exactly sure what the word fashion meant. The dresses were so ruffled and brightly colored that the mannequins wearing them looked embarrassed.
"So what's the difference between a fairy and a fairy godmother?" Daphne asked Moth.
The little fairy sneered.
"Of course an ignoramus like you wouldn't know the difference. Fairy godmothers and godfathers are lower beings. Unlike true-blood fairies, they need wands to perform magic. And they are born as adults, sometimes as very old people. They can be painfully ugly with their gray hair and wrinkles.
It must take great strength on your part to tolerate them, said Granny Relda, who had caught the end of Moth's speech.
It does, Moth said, nodding earnestly.
Well, we don't know this Twyla Rose, and if she's hiding cobwebs, she might be dangerous, Hampstead said, pulling his pants up over his belly. Be careful and keep your eyes peeled.
A fat orange tomcat lay outside, blocking the entrance to the store. Granny shooed it away and it raced shrieking into an old refrigerator box someone had dragged out onto the sidewalk. Inside the shop, they found racks and racks of shiny, poofy-sleeved ballroom dresses, covered in frills and lace. There were also several shelves of shoes in shocking, unnatural colors and funky-shaped handbags. A roly-poly lady stepped out of the back room and approached the group. She had a big, blue, beehive hairdo atop an almost perfect circle of a head. Her eyebrows were drawn on, and her cheeks and lips were bright pink. She was wearing a baby blue satin dress that made it look as if she might be off to her senior prom at any moment. A rhinestone belt with blue and green blinking lights completed the look.
"Welcome to Twyla Rose's Fashion Emporium. How can I help you?"
the woman sang.
"We're having a sale on spring fling formal wear and shoes. It's never too early to get a head start on the coming seasons. And remember, everything in this store is a Twyla Rose original. I design everything myself."
"So, you're Twyla Rose?" Granny asked.
"The one and only," the old woman said. "Perhaps you've seen my work on the runways of Milan, Paris, and Canton, Ohio."
"The Wizard of Oz sent us," Daphne said.
"We're looking for Cobweb," Granny Relda added.
Twyla Rose's eyes grew wide.
Indeed. Oh, my. I didn't recognize you. The Grimm family, she said louder than necessary. I'm so glad none of you people in the Grimm family were hurt in that mob scene at the Golden Egg. Terrible, terrible situation. I'm so thrilled to meet the Grimm family.
Well, I guess we know he's here somewhere, Sabrina said. The woman was obviously trying to warn Cobweb of their arrival.
I'm not sure what you're talking about, you people in the Grimm family. I just make clothing. In fact, I feel inspired. I'm going to give you all the Twyla Rose VIP makeover. Won't that be fun?
Twyla Rose reached into the folds of her dress and produced a magic wand. She waved it in the air and there was a loud bam. When Sabrina looked down, she was wearing a puffy leopard print dress with matching shoes. She looked over at the others and saw their clothes had been replaced as well. Daphne had on a rainbow-colored can-can dress, and Granny Relda was wearing a big pink gown with a hat as large as her whole body. Moth and Bess were both dressed in tracksuits covered in little golden bells and had snowshoes on their feet. Each of the women had so much makeup on, it looked as if it had been applied with a paintball gun. Poor Mr. Hampstead was wearing an electric blue tuxedo with tails and a top hat. Even Puck's cocoon had been made over, in different colored ribbons. Twyla Rose clapped her hands.
I am brilliant, she shouted. You all are going to be the toast of New York City.
Underling, we don't have time for this nonsense, Moth said.
Oh, no? You don't like the outfits? Maybe something more work appropriate? I'll fix you lickety-split.
The fairy godmother waved her wand again, and bam! The dresses were gone, replaced with outfits that were even more outrageous. Now, each of the women was wearing a long evening gown that had a badge, handcuffs, and a billy club swinging from it. Mr. Hampstead was dressed in a black-and-white prison uniform and had a ball and chain around his left leg. He looked down and grunted.
Genius!
Twyla Rose said, and then shook her head.
But the makeup is all wrong.
Bam! Sabrina turned to the mirror. She looked like a geisha from outer space with white pancake makeup and silver lipstick. Bam! Now she was wearing fake vampire teeth and a beanie cap with a propeller on top. Bam! Sabrina looked down to find she was carrying a toy poodle with a diamond collar, and she herself had two purple shiners, and some of her teeth had been blackened out.
No, maybe it's the shoes, Twyla Rose said.
Moth stepped forward and waved an angry finger at Twyla Rose.
I am a fairy and a member of the royal court, making me your superior. So, if you are quite finished with your atrocious fashion show... Atrocious?
Twyla Rose cried. She flicked her wrists, and before anyone could stop her, they were all bound from head to toe in thick steel chains.
It has been a long time since the glory days of Cinderella, but I'd hardly call my work atrocious. Whoa, whoa, whoa! Daphne cried. You're Cinderella's fairy godmother?
She tried to free her hand so she could insert it in her mouth.
Yes, she's what made me a fashion design icon. After that dress, every princess from here to Timbuktu would have killed for one of my designs. But those were the good old days, she said sadly. Enough!
Moth roared as she wiggled out of the chains that bound her.
Your blabbering is wasting our time. If you don't tell us where Cobweb is, I'll...
There is no need for threats, princess, a voice said from behind the curtains at the back of the store. The drapes were pulled aside, and Cobweb stepped through.
Murderer!
Moth screamed.
You are confused, Cobweb said.
I have killed no one.
We know you did it, Sabrina said. We heard it straight from Oberon.
I am innocent, Cobweb said, slightly confused.
Just then, there was a tremendous crash, and the front door to the shop blew off its hinges. The group struggled to see what had caused the commotion. Standing in the doorway were Tony Fats and Bobby Screwball. Their magic wands were held tight in their huge hands.
How did you find us?
Bess cried. The two goons ignored her.
Their eyes were trained on Mr. Hampstead.
"You shouldn't have messed with my girl,"
Tony Fats said as he and his partner stepped into the store.
"'Cause now, you and me, we're gonna have to settle this the way we did back in Fairy."
Tony Fats raised his wand, and with a flick of his wrist, a bolt of white-hot energy rocketed toward the group.